to the chase, okay? What do you guys
well,
say?
Well, thanks, drowning, thanks, Jack. I'm coming on. This is Dave Scantino. A little late this morning, but we're here. SP Futures up 4.25. NASDAQ Futures down 27. Lou, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, thanks. Glad to see everybody awake up there, and sorry. I guess I'm glad it wasn't me this time.
Well, it's we dodged it. What did we dodge? A Derecho last night or something? What the hell?
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was up in Wisconsin, and it was this massive, of course, forecast that, you know, not that these guys forecast.
How far did it go, or is it still going?
I think it was supposed to end by, like, Milwaukee. I don't think it ever made it quite to the, you know, the predicted idea, but do we have a thing now that every single time there's a storm, it's going to be the worst storm ever and then it never is? Is that a good idea to do to people as well? I don't know. But is there, is
well, you know, we've had the discussion about how once weather forecasters realized that they could panic populations and drive up ratings with the reports of excessive snow or excessive rain or wind or whatever, the minute they recognized that, you know, the Weather Channel was born, and you know, your local hysteria on weather moved into the fore in terms of broadcast.
Well, we're now driving ourselves to hysteria and the new vote COVID thing.
I'm amazed at the lack of. Well, maybe I shouldn't be. I mean, CDC and our public health policy people have failed completely in terms of messaging and explanations. And I think it is revealing, and I go back to, you know, we go back to the, you know, President Trump on this. It is revealing, the COVID thing is revealing just how unscientific and how manipulative the government, you know, the government really is. Rather than sitting down and just telling people, look, you can get, here's the deal. You can get vaccinated, and in fact, our high-risk populations, which includes me, by the way, our high-risk populations are, for the most part, you know, vaccinated, certainly vaccinated to the level of herd immunity. But the government people could say, look, you can get vaccinated. If you don't get vaccinated, then this Delta variant is coming in. It is not as severe as the original disease. However, it can make you sick and you can die from it. But here are the risks if you're this age, if whatever. And just explain that to people and let people make a choice with the understanding that, you know, you can get sick and whatever. But we're going nuts. Our health policy people are going nuts. Seasonal spike, which a number of people had predicted. You know, the cases are already falling in Great Britain, dropping precipitously, which is exactly what you would expect with a subsequent wave infection like this. And again, there's no trust in the American people. There's no trust in allowing people to make their own decisions. We instead impose these idiotic mask mandates, which have already been demonstrated not to work. At least the way we're doing them, they don't work. They don't have any effect on the infection rates. But we're going to impose that on people in their own, or we're going to recommend imposing that on people in their own homes, you know, with kids. And again, I'm saying, why with kids? The stats are stunning. Under the age of 18 in the United States, that for people under the age of 18, I believe there have been something like 350 deaths out of an infected, you know, population of whatever it is, 100 million. I mean, it's ludicrous.
Well,
so,
Louis,
yeah, don't get me started. This is a bit of a rant. Don't get me started with this first thing.
Well, but I mean, what I try and do, as you know, sometimes effectively, sometimes not, is tie sort of everything together into I don't know if it's all just money or what it is. I mean, everybody. I just had a guy on from CNBC. I was waiting for the show to start. I'm watching the CEO of Shake Shack. Now, the man's motivation, and I, you know, if I was a shareholder, I suppose it'd be okay. Motivation is to promote Shake Shack. So all he did was rant and rave about how his place is going to have masks, and oh, by the way, They want people to have masks coming in because they're so concerned about you. The man has no idea what he's talking about, and in the sense that everybody's vaccinated so they can be perfectly safe. Well, first of all, being vaccinated against this new variant does not make you perfectly safe. Don't tell people that, because it doesn't. You're still going to, quote, get it in your system. You're going to test positive. You're not going to be... It's a good idea to get vaccinated because you have less chance of being violently ill or dying. So there's no question it's a good idea. But it's being done for yourself. It's not being done because you can't give it to other people. Because guess what? This variant, you can, even if you are vaccinated. The only people in one of the studies that I read that didn't give it to other people were people that already had the COVID themselves before, because those antibodies, despite what these idiots tell you, appear to be stronger than the ones you get from the vaccination.
Right.
But they're never going to tell you that. But, you know, it's
why not give this information out and tell people you think you should be vaccinated?
Louis, you got to walk to a different part. You got to walk to a different part of the room. You're breaking up. What I try and tie stuff together is I was just listening also a lot about this infrastructure and how we got, you know, $1 trillion in. We shouldn't have lead pipes. We need to upgrade our we want to call it, our wire system, for lack of a better term, our delivery system for electricity. Now, Lou, I've spent, you know, a lot of my educational time in public business policy. I mean, that's what I loved at University of Chicago, and I still read the stuff as best I can. Now, wait a minute. I think at this point, when a government has no frigging money, They're in debt. Half of what they're spending, they're taking in half of that. So don't you, at some point, you just talked about not telling people the truth about COVID. At some point, are we going to ever give somebody an accounting of how exactly we got into this mess? Okay, we have some cities all have a water department. Okay, after 100 and some years, how is it that they get paid all the time, all kinds of vacations, all kinds of retirement, and people pay increasing amounts every friggin' year? How is it that there's still lead water pipes after 100 and some years? We don't have 50 people whose job it is to do 20 of these a day, and at the end of 5 years, they'll all be gone, or something like that. I mean, it may take longer than that. I mean, how now the electrical grid, there is Milton Friedman of one person said, one way you can do things like this, you don't have to give the monopoly to Commonwealth Edison to make it an electrical monopoly. What you could do is the state, for lack of a better term, could own the wires and the raceways, and you could auction off the people to input into it and take the lowest price. I mean, there's other ways to do this. Now, we have an electrical group that has been private. Now, you look at the Commonwealth Edison's increases over the years. Lou, they're prodigious. They're way ahead of any sort of inflation. It's incredible what they've managed to get from the governments, I think. I mean, I haven't gone back and really looked at all this, but I bet it is. The customer charges thing. Now, they haven't maintained the system adequately, or they have not put in enough capital adequately. Now, maybe the rates weren't high enough. I don't know. But the fact is, now we're going to give, are we going to give these people who did have the responsibility of upgrading these systems, I mean, are we going to give them now $90 bazillion to say, here, you're behind. Are we going to have any kind of analysis and say, okay, we're going to redo the power lines from here to Montana. But guess what? We're going to own them now, because you didn't do it, and all you guys do is fight over who gets to be on, and there's no way with you idiots fighting about whose power you get to use that we're going to power electric cars and everything else. From now on, we're going to own them because we're paying for it. I mean, Lou, is there any assessment at all of any of this stuff? I mean, is there any sort of rigorous study on anything?
In fact, I think it's pretty clear from at least the discussions that I saw.
Lou, you got to call back in, bud. We can't. You're gurgling. You're gurgling like you're underwater. Maybe you are. You're okay. A swimmer. Why don't you call back in?
I'll get him back.
All right. At some point, you know, I know, I'm ranting here. Lou and I are doing a dual rant, but at some point, when you start talking about trillions of dollars, doesn't there have to be some bit of study to it to say, wait a minute, okay, the power lines? I mean, to give you an example why I feel this way, I drove down to we drove down to Cincinnati to see the Cubs. This was years ago. And then I have family in Columbus, and once in a while I drive down there. There's a huge wind farm somewhere between here and Indiana, somewhere near Purdue. I couldn't tell you where the hell it is, but driving along, you see all of a sudden, like for miles, all you see is massive amounts of windmills. So there must be, for some reason, that spot in Indiana actually gets some wind. So anyway, it was a pretty breezy day, and you see a bunch of them, you know, winging along. But you see the rest of them stop. They're not going anywhere. I'm thinking, wow, what's the deal with that? So I talked to my buddy, who's a high wire guy, and he says, well, no, the input structure, the wire structure, can't handle them. Well, what do you mean? I said, it's a big data. That power is damn near free once you have the thing up there. Oh, yeah, well, they can't. I mean, somebody else's plants. That means Commonwealth Edison doesn't want it. They don't need it. I was like, because they're running something more efficient. Yeah, but that's theirs. So they're buying it from themselves. They're not buying it from these guys. And maybe the wires aren't good enough from Indiana to here. All right, Lou, I was just saying that the whole electrical infrastructure, you can't leave that to a group of competing power companies, because they're never going to want your stuff to get to their place efficiently, right? I mean, there's way more involved in this than just...
Well, yeah, well, that's why these are public monopolies.
Well, but at some point when they have to talk to each other, and they don't, that falls. That even gets worse than them buffaloing your state legislator.
I mean, I agree. That's why FERC, you know, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission was formed, and that's why these things are basically public monopolies. The trade-off is we will effectively eliminate competition for you if you allow yourself, you know, to be your organization and your profits and everything else to be subsumed into a public or placed under the control of a public regulatory entity.
That they totally buffalo and outlast and control.
Well, again, this is a classic example of the private sector having a much better understanding of its industry than the government that regulates it. And this idea that, you know, we can just sort of sit back and let these things run on their own like some kind of clockwork mechanism with only minimal oversight is what gets you, you know, ComEd. That's what gets you Flint, Michigan. That's what gets you, you know, the blackouts on the East Coast. I mean, these are very complex systems that require a lot of smart people overseeing them, like the tax code. And if government is not going to pay well enough, or government's affirmative action programs are not going to put smart people into these positions, or going to not promote smart people into these positions, then you end up literally with a situation where the regulated are running the regulators, because the regulators aren't going to be bothered to understand how this works.
Well, we also have, I mean, I'll go out on this limb with you, Luke, because you're my attorney. When you allow your people in Washington to only be there for a few years anyway, I mean, that your Secretary of Energy or whatever is only there for 4 years, or not even that, if they quit, like under Trump or something, there's no way you can expect them to be able to get up on the systems quick enough to go head-to-head with Commonwealth Edison. I mean, you just can't. It just can't happen.
Well, I don't expect, but see, this is why a lot of the folks that get hired into these positions need to come from these companies. Yeah, and I mean, I don't know how you screen the technical expertise that is developed over a lifetime of working in this industry with the public-spirited citizenness, if that's a word, that would allow somebody like that to step away from the industry and say, okay, now I'm going to regulate this entity, or I'm going to take over regulating this entity with an idea to helping, you know, the public first and the industry second. I don't know how you screen for those guys, but I think that's what you need.
Well, Lou, you finally succeeded, my friend. I know you've been trying for years. You just put me in a total cold sweat. Now you might
say, why is that?
How has it worked having people from Goldman Sachs being Secretary of the Treasury and so forth? How have they dealt? Do they ever really leave Goldman Sachs?
No, that's you know, that's the issue. I mean, but you need somebody from Goldman Sachs or its financial equivalent who has operated in these markets, who understands monetary policy. You need somebody like that who's been a lifetime doing it to come in and oversee these operations. Otherwise, you know, we have a federal government whose regulatory reach extends down to the outlets in your home. I don't want some person, that, you know, maybe in civil service there's some bureaucrat somewhere who's got this comparable level of expertise, but I highly doubt it.
I do too.
Because our civil service system does not breed for that.
Are you going to, all right, well then now it comes down to, of course I had University of Chicago. Now, after coming in for 4 years, if their lifeboat is back to Goldman Sachs, is back to Commonwealth Edison, is that what you want? I mean, we're getting to the point now where we have to be fairly detailed. And plus, you know, I probably shouldn't go this way. I got like a minute and a half left. But the city of Chicago, one of my friends who's very tight with the city, says virtually every person of any administrative supervisory position in the city now is black. And you look at the people that every person who's a secretary of something something is female. Well, guess what? Blacks are 20% of the population. If you limit the talent pool to 20, even if they are, like the Asians, the smartest people around, is that what you want? I mean, our motivation to put these people in these spots has nothing to do with their competence, Lou.
Well, this is the issue with why our civil service bureaucracy does not breed for this stuff. It is rife with the kind of virtue signaling and affirmative action push that does not screen for talent. And we've talked about this, that for example, the city of Chicago spends as much per pupil as does New Trier on its school kids, but the results are completely different. And part of the reason is that within bureaucracies like Chicago, the city government is an employment agency. And if you happen to get decent service out of it, or you happen to put a competent person into that position, well, that's just icing on the cake. But that's not the real reason you have this. It's an employment agency.
But Lou,
it's a mechanism for wealth redistribution.
And to some extent,
its primary purpose.
But to some extent, I don't necessarily have a massive problem with that. The difference is if you and I walked into a casino and we had, you know, somebody's nephew was with us who just turned 21 and wanted to gamble, we might give the kid, you know, $100 and say, go play the slot machines, just don't bother us. I mean, I don't think we would do that, but we could. And you can do that, all right? And the $100 in this day and age of inflation isn't that big of a deal. But it's quite another if the kid says, wait a minute, I want $20,000 to go play blackjack. Well, do you even know how to play? Well, no, but I still want the $20,000. I don't want to look like a mope. I mean, we're talking about $1 trillion we don't have. We're reaching a point where the person we put in charge of this better know what they're doing. We're talking about D-Day here, for God's sake, monetarily. The people you put in charge of those, they better be your best people. And I don't think these are. I mean,
not where the rubber meets the road. I agree. I mean, again, the purpose of this $1 trillion infrastructure deal is not to fix the infrastructure. It's to give money to a bunch of political cronies up and down the spectrum. And if roads get built and bridges get fixed, hey, that's great. But that's not the purpose of this bill.
Well, I think we're at the stage now where it seems to me anyway, and again, I've been studying this for whatever reason my whole life, we're at the tipping point, Lou. We can't afford another $3 trillion screw-up, even though the people getting it think we can. Obviously, if you're on the far end of that, you think...
The president thinks we can. The president's just...
Well, the president is...
A $4 trillion bill that they want to run reconciliation?
Other than his son and wife getting money from the government and books from about the government, the dude hasn't made a regular check in his life, has he?
No, not as far as I can tell. Well, don't forget the Hunter Biden art exhibit.
Well, yeah, but stuff like that. But anyway, Lou, we have so much more to talk about. We'll make up for it next week, buddy. Take care of yourself. S&P futures up 7, NASDAQ futures down 11. Back, Mr. Dan Genius.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Alley. Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. S&P Futures up 750. NASDAQ Futures down 950, as they used to say on the trading floor. Do we have Mr. Dan Janinas with us?
You do, yes.
Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I hope you were had a stiff drink next to you yesterday when you listened to your... I'm gonna come out there and say absolutely buffoonish Fed chairman talking about transitory in a way. Well, it's not really transitory. I'm not really saying the prices of cars are going to come down, but don't worry about it. It's like a new level, and I'm sitting there going, what is he talking about? And then the CEO of Ford on their earnings came out and said they made money because they were able to raise the car price. They can't believe how much they can raise their car prices. I'm sitting there.
Right.
This is on the same day? I mean, really?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So what did you have, tequila, or was it a good scotch? What did you have?
Either one of those would have worked fine. I had a client dinner the night before with some tequila, so I decided to hold off. But maybe tomorrow night I'll have one. But no, I came out pretty much the same place that you did, and you know, this sort of, you know, waiting for, you know, I'm not sure what they're waiting for, but waiting for you know, this maximum employment, and not really looking at the specific, you know, data and the figures and where they're coming from and who's leaving the workforce. In particular, you know, they're not paying attention to baby boomers who've decided to step out, retire, you know, cops who've decided to retire early, people who've decided that this was a good opportunity to step out and are really not planning on coming back and being counted again as part of the workforce. But I absolutely agree with you that if, with inflation that, if the Fed waits too long to taper and just, you know, keeps sort of dragging their heels the way they have, that would be a lot more detrimental to our economy than if the Fed were to decide to do something sooner, and actually, you know, to use the word taper. Taper doesn't mean cut back 100%. It means taper. It means cut back slowly. So I think there's so much fear that if there's on the Fed's part, that if there is a directional move, that's going to stir up the market. And I really don't think that. I think at this point the market is expecting that. Inflation is definitely here. I don't think it's going anywhere. I do think maybe on some of the commodities we're going to see, as we always do, we're going to see some volatility. But when it comes to wages, for example, you know, food, I guess at some point they'll cut food prices back, but there's as you mentioned, cars. And you know, there can be an excuse for each of these areas. You know, there can be the fact that some, you know, semis, it can be the supply chain and all that, but there still has to be people to get back to work to get these, you know, the supply chain working again. And I'm not sure that we're going to get back to where we were. I do think we're going to stay at a higher level of inflation. That's also part of the business cycle. That's the part of the business cycle that we're in. But the part that really throws me still is this employment thing, where he keeps going back on, you know, employment and you know, having high inflation and high unemployment, and you know, and then you have all the companies saying that they're having a hard time finding people and filling spaces. Well, where I think the time that's going to be important to watch is going to be what's going to happen here in September. So when the unemployment benefits are taken away, are we actually going to see those employment numbers increase? Are people going to finally say, okay, I've had my extended summer vacation, which is extended now for a year and a half and is extending through this summer, and finally get back to work, get back to school? You know, is there going to be another excuse, for example, like the Delta variant, which I really don't think makes sense. I think companies, small level and high level, small companies, your neighborhood stores, your big box stores, your businesses across the board in the service industry have all found a way to deal with COVID. So I really think that's less of an issue going forward. What's more of an issue is just getting people back into these jobs and getting the jobs filled and providing some incentive to get these jobs filled rather than continuing to provide incentive. And when I talk about, what I'm talking now is more about people entering the workforce, where the lower paying jobs or the less skilled jobs, but people can get, you know, with the right training programs, people can get up to speed pretty quickly, and companies are going to pay a little more now. So, you know, I'm hoping, I think September will tell us a lot, when the benefits, the unemployment benefits, go away. And, you know, I think we're going to still have, you know, the infrastructure bill, I think, should be enough to show that the government is still supporting growth and supporting expansion, and that's going to help a lot of businesses. But I'm not sure we need this extra infusion or this really crazy infusion of capital into our system right now.
And I think the stuff you hear, I personally, on the economic level, I mean, I've been kind of, you know, the guy who cried wolf for a while on this, but I really do believe we're reaching a point of no return. These guys don't know what they're doing. I mean, it's scary that they're just pouring money at people that have their ear without even really any regard to whether it goes down the chain or anything. I mean, it's just, I mean, I this whole idea of you can't find people for work. I was talking to my brother about it yesterday, and he says, well, you know, he goes, how do any of these people have an idea of, considering what prices are right now and what it costs you to go back to work, being cars and everything else,
right,
why does anybody think that anybody's going to work for what they did 18 months ago? What manner of moron would you have to be? Not to mention the fact that these prices are up so high. Why? I mean, I was just, one of the listeners sent me a thing about 35 years ago, a Big Mac was, whatever it was $1.65, and now it's $5.65 or something in most places. Well, that's a 340% increase, and the CPI is 248. And I can name you spots where the gap is way higher. So I don't even know what these people, just the way they do the stuff. And I shouldn't even do this, Dan. But plus, I burden you with it because I ruin your day by telling you this stuff. I mean, your weird part of it is
the same thing.
Yeah, but if somebody, the way it works, even if these people that do the numbers are legit, which I don't believe they are. I mean, let's put it this way. Each individual person who goes through that massive list of CPI and tries to find out the cost of, you know, dried beans from last month to this month, I'm not going to accuse that person of screwing things up. Because I think the person comes in, does his job like everybody else. So I'm not accusing any individual bureaucrat of being a crook. But the way the thing works out is if for instance, you have the price of used cars that are 4% of somebody's basket, okay, and all of a sudden they go up, say 50% in a year, which is damn near going to be the number this year, by the way. If they go up 50%, well, now in anybody's brain, that 4% of the basket isn't right. It should be more, because now it's a way bigger chunk of what you earn. Because, by the way, you're not earning anymore. So say that number should go now to 6 or 7. Well, if it does, the next year and the year after they stay even, that actually detracts from your next 2 years number, even though you never picked up the real increase in the first place. So even if people are legit and do this right, the numbers, if things are flying around like they are now, are going to show bad results. That's if people have all the best intentions. And I don't think they do.
Right. No, I agree with you on that. It's, you know, the whole thing about transitory or temporary is it's not really thinking out, you know, too long. It's not thinking out a year or 2 years and the impact that it's going to have. And there'll be a continued squeeze on the labor market as time goes on. And again, the piece that I'm seeing that I don't think that I'm hearing, at least from the Fed, is just the people who have stepped out of the workforce permanently. You know, the baby boomers, the people who were right behind the baby boomers who've decided to, you know, and I have several clients in the situation who decided to give up the business or sell the business because you're getting a good asset value to do that right now, and, you know, travel or pursue some other interest that they have, you know, whether it be golf or boating or whether it be management consulting on the side, and they won't be recounted in this. And then the other issue you have to deal with is the other end of the demographics, people coming into the labor force, and there needs to be more incentive to get these people to get back to work or to get to work, period, because they've had there's been this delay period. And offering all of these options of working from home and staying at home, I mean, that is going to have to be a transition, and it's going to take a while before people realize, you know, I mean, the best thing as far as I'm concerned is getting people back out working, getting kids back in school, getting things operating in that fashion, because in the end, that's what's going to be more effective, and in that way, we're going to be able to measure really what's going on with employment, and you know, are people really working part-time when they're at home, or are they as productive? So there's sort of like there's two sides, I think, of what's happening in the employment picture, and I really don't think the Fed is measuring it properly. I think they're looking just at the bottom line statistic and trying to, you know, look back over history and say this is where we are, and the situation is unique that we're in now. But I think the solutions to getting us to a more even, normalized economy and back on what I would refer to as the business cycle that we've been in for now, you know, this expansionary phase has been, you know, what, 12 years. So, you know, it's naturally going to happen at this stage. You know, taking out the COVID period, it's naturally going to happen. And that's where we're at right now. What's interesting to me, and I don't know if you're seeing this frustration, is we're certainly seeing the frustration in finding yields, and we've been talking about this for a year now, that, you know, each day that goes by, it becomes more difficult. Negative real yields make it more difficult. Foreign buyers coming in and buying our treasuries make it more difficult. Our own government buying securities, we're not going to see any type of uptick in rates. And while there are a lot of companies that benefit from low rates, you know, the big, the go-go names, the tech names, there's also people who benefit from rates gradually increasing. And even your saver, you know, or your person who wants to put some money aside in a liquid account to have a little bit of powder, if you believe we're gonna, you know, or they might just need that money. So there's a disincentive for people to be putting money into money markets and CDs, and yet at the same time, some people don't have a choice. That's really where they have to put their money. And I've had several discussions with people as to why we're here, and I keep going to, you know, the Fed, it's, you know, FOMC needs to make some moves here. We need to see some tapering. We need to see rates, you know, slowly maybe coming up, maybe just start the process slowly. What we don't need to see is a reaction to hyperinflation or more concerns that, you know, sort of a negative fallout, if you will, from inflation coming, say, later in this year or early next year. So that would be what my concerns are at this point. And it's tough from an investor's point of view because you're looking at yields and you're looking at bonds and they're not making sense, and you're looking at, you know, valuations on a lot of equities. You know, fortunately, we're in an area, we find names that are, you know, like some of the preferreds and the REITs, and you know, we have been playing the infrastructure move, which is working out with us. With, you know, the bill passing is just one thing that I think is support for these names, but you know, there's an overall support, if you will. So, you know, and some of those names pay a decent dividend as well. So I think, you know, having to look and find the right names in this environment, because your typical stock and your typical bond, or your more popular stock and your more popular bond, are, you know, grossly overvalued right now.
Well, the economic, if you were sitting in a class, which obviously we're not, the economic explanation of what you just said is that the real rate of interest is artificially being kept essentially negative,
right,
which causes all kinds of problems all up the line. Because normally, if the real rate of interest is, say, 3%, which it's been through the centuries, your risky thing should be, you know, your moderate risk should be 6, your little bit more moderate risk should be 8, and your junk bonds or whatever should be 11, you know, or something. But it doesn't follow that if your risk-free rate is -6, that your risky stuff should be 0. That even though people will say that it does, it doesn't, because if it's risky, it should never be 0. Right? So what the Fed has done is driven all logic out of the numbers. And what it really, I mean, the part, Dan, and I think the reason why we're stuck where we are, and you and I are talking about this, and most people wonder what the hell we're talking about, is I was on a show, a while ago with a lady, won't even say her name, because I was telling you what I was, because I said, you know, because it was about inflation, and they didn't like, she had another guest, another co-host, and they didn't like anything what I was saying at all. I was like doggy downer, which it sounds like. And I said, well, by the way, I hope that you have $1 million contract. You know, I'm going to say you deserve whatever. I don't really know what the going rate is in the industry. I said, but I'm going to say to you that if you don't have an escalation clause in that contract, at the end of 5 years, that your pay is going to be worth $560. Well, you would have thought that I just farted in church. And also, I said, by the way, if you got $1 million in the bank, at the end of this year, it's going to be worth $900,000. There is no mindset whatsoever. We're so far removed from that, Dan, that anybody has any idea what I'm talking about.
I agree, and it's a really tough one to explain, even to more sophisticated people. It's a really tough idea to get across to people so that they can, you know, rather than coming and saying, you know, where's my 2-5% on my cash. And you know, it seems that I don't know how many different ways of saying that, you know, the Fed is needs to taper, you know, and even going through the logic and even like doing some reports on it, it's something that people don't want to hear because they do see it as a negative, and because on the other side we're seeing this sort of in a lot of people's minds, they're focusing on what they view as a booming economy, you know, with the stock market breaking new records, with productivity, you know, improvements, you know, with people getting back to work, and I don't think people want to hear negative news. They don't want to realize that. But this is and always has been the credit market. It always has been something on the credit side that has triggered what I think a lot of equity and especially growth equity investors have been caught off guard, and they're just not listening right now. I think there's a you know, there's an education that needs to take place, and there's an eye opening, and we don't want that to happen. You know, after the plane crashes.
Yeah, I want to ask you.
Make sure that we're alert while we're coming down for the landing. And I'm not sure that a Fed that is you know, really not giving us any data or giving us any indication of you know, we'll make sure we take care of this after the fact. You want it to be taken care of, or at least starting to be taken care of before the fact, so that we don't end up in those situations.
Well, Dan, I got a question for you.
Exactly, we're in the same place.
Let me ask you how far we are in the same place, because you're not near as much of a conspiracy bluff as I am, and I'm not. We've got guys on the show that make me sound like that I don't even know what a conspiracy is. But I mean, when you have a simple example, if I put forth a policy knowingly or unknowingly that say benefits you and hurts Dave, okay. There's a million policies out there. Maybe I don't even know that it did. It could be some obscure insurance thing or something. But after a period of, like, damn near a decade, when 15 people have beat their path to my door and said, you know what you're doing? You're really helping Dan, but you're really screwing Dave. I mean, especially after a period of time, and this policy has been there for, like, 10 years now. I mean, there's, like, almost no coming back for poor Dave. If I keep doing it, I either got to be the dumbest person on earth, or that has to have been my intent all along. And right now, I'm thinking that this is their intent all along. That who was ever running the government, that the fact that these companies aren't just the biggest they've ever been, they're also the most influential they've ever been. And the idea that every single policy lands with Amazon borrowing money at 2% and you getting nothing, these guys aren't that stupid. We're not the only ones that see that, hey, there's a problem there. And the fact that they don't fix it makes me think that that was the plan all along, or certainly is the plan now, and it's not going to end.
It's, you know, size and money speaks, often, and that's, you know, I agree with you that there is some of that going on, that there has to be. And you know who people are. Like I said, when you, even when you're measuring employment, you also have to look at how you're measuring. You know, companies. You know, when still a very large portion of our economy is based on small businesses. I do think a lot of small businesses have found a way to survive in this environment or have to reinvent themselves. I do think we're, at least just from observation, getting past that period that we were in a year ago. In terms of people moving on, small business owners reinventing themselves or getting their businesses back, but maybe with a different business model. And the attention, but however, you know, a little bit of inflation and a little bit of higher rates are not going to hurt those businesses. It's going to hurt the Amazons.
Yeah.
So there has to be a little bit more equality, I think, in terms of spreading out the you know, or pulling in some of the capital. Because it isn't filtering down to you know, necessarily to everybody at this point, and I doubt it will going forward. So when looking at investments, again, I still focus on the names that we have that I refer to as steady eddies, that, you know, when the fan gets hit, let's put it that way, with a lot of this junk, that will happen if the Fed doesn't do anything. You're going to be in, you know, on safer ground.
We've had some
areas that aren't going to be as negatively impacted by you know, complacency or sort of a lack of proactive movement to help help benefit the economy as a whole.
Well, Dan, I think
certain segments of the economy,
even the stuff that it's worked its way down. I mean, the odd part is I obviously was not alive during World War II. I was a baby boomer, but the people that I knew growing up obviously were very much affected by it. And I think in those days, even though there weren't some people that benefited pretty well, I think the idea of stealing money from your government in times of duress was looked at pretty badly, to the point of almost being treason, right? Well, now, I honestly believe that the morality has changed to everybody's stealing, the stealing money from the government is now a national sport at virtually every level. I made the mistake of looking at that. There probably is one in Florida. I was looking at the amount of loans that were given in Illinois, PPP, well, forgiven loans in just about every case. Damn, $38 billion, 650,000 places. So I was running through the list of the people that are there, the restaurants, the law firms. First of all, I'm going to ask you, why do we have any problem bringing people back when you were just paid to not let people go?
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't think any of these places, well, I won't say any because I don't, but I'm going to say if you, even that everybody's adherence to the law to get forgiven was probably right at the line. And if you audited 100 of these places, I would bet 80 of them would be not in compliance. And how many people they laid off, or the second you could, you laid people off anyway, or a firm that actually had a big year last year got $500,000 from the government, and the guy retired and sold it. I mean, I think the incredible screw up all across the board is something that if people saw it, there'd be lynch mobs everywhere. Not that I'm in favor of lynching, I'm not. But I mean, I think if anybody knew the truth, it would be brutal.
I agree. I think there's more of that going on than we're seeing and that we're going to see in the press. But you are going to see it. Now that you're seeing a lot of these smaller businesses coming back, and you know where we were asked, where were they getting their money, and you know we were seeing the pictures of businesses, you know, with the door shut. I'm not seeing that anymore. I'm seeing companies that have small businesses that have reinvented themselves, that have managed to make it. I mean, certainly we know the larger businesses have done a very good job of making it are doing very well. Earnings are showing that. Productivity is showing that over the past year. So I would agree with you. I did see some language in this new infrastructure bill that is going to be fairly strict against unemployment insurance and you know, policing it and, you know, maybe kind of monitoring it a little bit more. And I think that that's important. I think that, you know, if it's going to be offered, it needs to be going to the right places and certainly cut back, I think, from, you know, the people that are, especially from the people that are younger and entering the workforce who need to be getting skills, developing skills to work and kind of keeping our economy going. And certainly to get motivation to get out there and, you know, whatever they're going to do in their careers, start a business, start a trade, you know, move forward. And that I think definitely needs to happen to have our successful economy.
Well, you know, you probably have not, first of all, you haven't been foolish enough or have not been forced to be the person who actually did some research on this, because I did it for the show and I did it for our firm. And it turns out, I don't know if you know it or not, Dan, but you are in, by being an investment manager like we are, you are in a, what do you call it? A business that's a necessary business. What was the word they used? An essential,
yeah, essential.
You're an essential business. So if,
yes.
If, even if you guys get beat up by what was happening, because we got beat up, not because our clients or anything like that, because we were all, but we, you know, because they were shutting downtown and bridges up, we didn't see a client in the office for a year and a half. So, but I mean, if you're an essential business, even if you were partially shut down, there was a revenue test. So in other words, if you did better, if your revenue was it 70 or 80% of last year's, you didn't get any money. Well, of course, ours was 70, 80% of last year's. We didn't, you know, we didn't drop very much. And because we, you know, we still had clients, so to service them, even though we were partially shut down, we were, you know, we didn't get anything. So the, but now if we were a restaurant, now the restaurant lobby managed to break into this. If you're not an essential business, which you would think would be treated like worse, new, if you're a restaurant, if your bar was shut down, if you had double the revenue last year, you got 70% back of all the money you paid your employees. Because your bar, you were partially shut down. Yeah, but I had six seats in the bar, and I put a tent out that made myself four times bigger than I ever was. You were partially shut down. There was no revenue test. I mean, it's scary who writes this stuff. I mean, it is. Anyway, Dan, by the way, I did some of the stuff for my clients of your stuff this week, and we have other people kind of chasing that one bond a little bit. We can't get it under 100.
Yeah, this has been, you know, I'd say of you know, probably in my career, this has been one of the toughest times to actually get in, you know, to invest in bonds at any level, and especially on the short term, looking at short term bonds. I was looking at some American Airlines secured equipment trusts that are, you know, we're not talking high quality, and we'll look, you know, like 0.5%, and you have to measure the credit risk versus the, you know, the return that you're getting, which is really very minimal, and it's, at some point it's just not worth it. So there will be somebody that will be dumping or selling Genworth, for example, at some point, and I think that'll create an opportunity. But, you know, the more we have news like we did yesterday from the Fed, the harder it's going to be to buy any kind of yield on the short end. So
I would agree. Dan, we got it.
On the short end, it's not a liquidity issue. It's just an issue of price.
Oh, yeah.
You will be able to sell them at some price, but, you know, I mean, buy them at some price, I mean. But you know, then you have to measure the credit risk against the...
Right now, I'd rather already have them. I'd be selling them. But Dan, thank you very much, buddy. Talk to you next week. S&P's up 7. NASDAQ, just pop positive. You're up by a buck. We'll be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 online on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Owens, Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. We're going to do this pretty quick because we're running a little late today. S&P futures up 7, NASDAQ futures down 5, Dow futures up 137, individual stocks up, Caterpillar up 2, we've got Goldman Sachs up 247, we got Home Depot up 181. Home Depot was down earlier in the week. I couldn't figure out that out, but they're bouncing back today. Over in Europe, we've got, by the way, the GDP came out at quarter 2 GDP, rising at 6.5% versus 8.4% estimate. I'm going to say that the inflation rate, I believe, is almost 10% now, which puts the GDP almost negative. These numbers are not good considering the inflation that we're talking about. Just saying. DAX up 72.5%, FTSE up 67. It's a full 1%, CAC around up 50.7%. Asia. Nikkei up 200, that's 0.7%. We got the Chinese markets finally bouncing after they're getting clobbered all week. Shanghai up 50, 1.5. But the one that was really getting whacked, the Hang Seng, is up 841, that's 3.3%. Remember, they were down 8% on Monday and Tuesday, total on Monday and Tuesday, not 8% both days, 4% each day. So they're bouncing back as well. Bonds, 10-year minus 1 tick to 1.25%. Bund unchanged at minus 0.44. Japan minus 0.0 or positive 0.01 unchanged. We've got oil quickly up 22 cents, 72.61. So almost up to the middle to upper end of this range. So they've been a serious bounce back from the 67, 68 we saw a couple weeks ago. Brent $75, that's up 30 cents. Natural gas down 3 cents, 393. RBOB unchanged, 231. We've got gold up $26, 1825, which I think it should be up another 200 after Fed speech yesterday, but I don't get to make the market. Silver, I'd make the market higher, David, and everybody would be selling it to me. That wouldn't be a good thing, would it?
No.
Silver up 71 cents, 25.59. We'll see if silver can actually break through 26 here. It has not been able to. Copper up 3 cents at 452, and we've got Bitcoin down 681 at 39,677, so just under 40,000. We were talking about just under 30,000 like a week ago, so it's bounced back real fast. We're not doing traffic, weather, sports, although the weather last night, we didn't get the...
Yeah, stormy morning.
Yeah, what was the thing last night? What do they call that thing?
I'm not sure.
The ratio?
Yeah, was it, John?
Well, they were predicting that.
Well, I just
lost him.
He'll call back. Well, anyway, Derecho, I think it was. A Derecho.
Yeah, that's... I think it's a Derecho.
Okay, there's another. It's a Hispanic term, I believe, and I don't know how to pronounce it. So Brendan, how are we? Brendan and Jen.
I just think it's the same name as a guy I went to high school with. His name was Derico, and I always think that even though it's spelled differently, it's pronounced the same way.
All right. Well, we didn't get it, but it was supposedly going to. It's lack of a better term. It's like an inland hurricane, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yes, we had one last year. Last summer, yeah. We had one.
Yeah. So anyway, Brendan, we'll
through the whole Lincoln Park area.
David will get Jan back here at some point, but you want to talk a little bit about the Olympic stuff and what's her name? Simone, what's her last name?
Simone Biles.
Yeah, and she's is she out of the individuals now too?
Well, today is the competition for the all-around individuals where each of the athletes performs all four events. And she dropped out of that as well. There's still a possibility that she could compete because she's qualified for each of the four events in the individual rounds, which I think takes place next week. But she dropped out of the all-round competition, so she's not competing today.
Okay. Boy, it's a long trip. to get her here to be in this kind of condition. But I've never heard the reason for somebody got out of something for the term was mindfulness. What is that? What does that even mean?
Mindfulness is paying attention to how you're feeling in the present moment without looking too much at the past and without judgment. So without saying that what she should be feeling or what somebody else expects her to feel, how does she feel right now? Without fears of something repeating from the past or something that she's afraid will happen in the future.
So it could be she doesn't feel quite right, afraid of injury. Could be anything like that. Could be anything. You don't even know.
Well, a lot of times there's a difference between internal pressure and external pressure. And internal, you know, and we're all wired in different ways. We're either motivated by internal reasons or external reasons. And the best way to explain that is that if I'm externally motivated, I've got to win at all costs. I've got to win on my training runs. I've got to win the race. I have to be better than you. Internally means I'm trying to get the best performance for me as possible. But there are also external factors. There's a lot of influencers that affect each one of us. There are things like spiritual, mental, emotional, physical, social, and environmental influencers that affect all of us. And a lot of what Simone Biles is dealing with, and many of the other athletes in the United States Olympic team, are the external pressures put on by the media and those of us in America. They have to win. If they don't win, then they're a failure. They're a bad person. And even though Simone Biles is the one who's the focus of this right now, we saw something recently with Naomi Osaka, the tennis player. We've also seen some of the comments about Katie Ledecky because she didn't sweep all of the medals in swimming. You can even look at the anticipation of some of the premier soccer teams like Argentina and Germany and France, which did not get out of the qualifying rounds. So the people in their countries are degrading the abilities and the personalities of the players because they didn't win. Mindfulness comes down to an understanding that one of the phrases that's used often is, we're human beings, we're not human doings. So we have to be in our own headspace in order to perform better. It's not what we do. I'm not a good person because I'm a lawyer. You're not a good person because you're a traitor. Those are things that you do to.
Well, I think most people would agree the part.
But not who you are.
Most people would agree about the lawyer part. Brendan is on as a guest today because for those that we don't bring us up too much, but we should. In addition to being a brilliant attorney and my foil and argues about me, and I learn a lot from him. He also has been a marathon coach for years and years, so he knows. For what he speaks when it talks about how people motivate, especially as they age, and they're not going to win anything. But, and John, because John has been a gym rat his entire life.
Oh, yeah. My middle name, Tom.
But Chief, you just said something very interestingly about the runners that I coach, that they're not going to win anything, especially as they age.
The
purpose of mindfulness is not to be the first person that you win every race.
I'm saying you have
to get your best performance.
You have to motivate yourself in a way. But I've sensed this motivation changing. And Jan, you know, I think Jan knows what I'm talking about. I always wanted to be in a softball league that was very competitive, which means if we didn't play well, we deserved to get spanked. And if we played well, we won. The last thing I wanted was to be in a league that we just mowed through and thought we were any good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but today, if you don't go 10-0 or if you don't win, somebody thinks there's something wrong with you. I mean, but I'm not a professional softball player.
And that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
And that's
right.
Really part of the problem, that when Simone Biles was expected to win, when Michael Phelps was expected to win over a couple of Olympics, if he didn't, if Katie Ledecky came in fifth and didn't even make the medal stand, there's something wrong with her. It's not a question of saying maybe there are better athletes because Katie Ledecky is older now, or there are just better athletes. I mean, you both know as we age, as we go through life, there's always going to be somebody who's bigger, faster, stronger, whatever. Probably not ever good looking compared to you, Chief, but you know,
yeah.
For all these other things, there will be somebody who's bigger and faster and stronger. I mean, think about Roger Bannister. Before he broke the 4-minute mile, that was deemed to be impossible. And yet, every time people, you know, approached that, it seemed like it was more impossible because it kept failing. Yet once he accomplished it, the dam broke. And so there was this plethora of runners that came shortly after he did to break the 4-minute mile. But the idea that if you don't break the 4-minute mile, you're a failure is something that I see changing in our perspectives right now towards athletes.
Well, how much, you know, I'm going to ask this. You know, I'm going to ask this, and Jen's going to quake over there because you're going to say he's doing it again. You know, I'm going to ask this, but how much of it is money? You know, when Tiger Woods came up and was you know, sniveling basically, for lack of a better term, about what the pressure was doing to him after 3 or 4 years and he had a bazillion dollars worth of endorsements and everything else. And Arnold Palmer, who's now deceased, my favorite golfer, who's dead. So he became a pretty good friend of Tiger's, I believe. But he said at the time, Arnold was always a very, shall we say, plain-spoken guy. And they asked, I don't know if you remember this, Jim, they said, Arnold Palmer, what do you think about, you know, Tiger Woods all of a sudden being, you know, the pressure's getting to him? He goes, he put the pressure on himself. Nobody told him he had to get Nike and everybody else. He goes, Nike expects him to win. If he was just a regular guy, he's winning for himself. He didn't want that.
Yeah, there's a lot of product.
That's not the entire answer that he put it on himself.
Well, you guys are both talking, John.
Oh, sorry. There's a lot of stuff riding on Biles' performance here. You know, with Kellogg's and they expected to have her face on their products for the next, you know, cycle to the Olympics. And they're going to have to, you know, regroup now that there's always going to be an asterisk attached to that. Brendan and Tom, I'm wondering, do you think that there's some kind of natural, you know, result here, given the way the press coverage has kind of pathologized Olympics performers for a long time, where when they do these promos and during the TV coverage of it, they're all kind of case studies in abusive childhoods or whatever. They become intensely interesting to people for really private, you know, reasons that are nobody's business, and they're turned inside out to the public, and everything about them becomes scrutinized. And when something like this happens, if somebody decides, I can't do this, we already feel like we've been kind of admitted to their inner sanctum and have thought about them and worried about them and have an opinion about their mental state. And I think it just puts way too much pressure on an individual performer.
Well,
I agree with that. I think there is a lot of pressure that are put on the performer, and I think you both hit on components of the pressure and where it comes from. To Chief's point about the money, yes, when you've got Nike offering a gazillion dollars to a Tiger Woods or promoting a campaign, I mean, think about 1992 and 1996. In 1992, prior to 1992, one of the decathlon Olympians, projected decathlon Olympians, was Dan O'Brien. He was supposed to be the greatest thing, you know, since even before Bruce Jenner, who won in 68 for the decathlon. Dan O'Brien did succumb to the pressure. He missed a pole vault leap and didn't even qualify for the team. He was part of a big ad campaign leading up to that about how this was going to be the greatest Olympic decathlon champion ever. He didn't even make the team. 4 years later, without the ad campaign, without a lot of support, without a lot of fanfare, he made the team and won the gold in Atlanta. The pressure was taken off of him, but a lot of it is expectations. Money is certainly a part of it, but the expectations that you, Dan O'Brien, you, Simone Biles, you, Katie Ledecky, you, Michael Phelps, are letting America down if you don't win a gazillion medals at the Olympics.
Well, you're letting...
That's externally generated.
It is, but I'm not taking a shot at any of these people. You know I'm not. I mean, I feel for them because I've been an athlete such as it was my whole life, and I understand at least part of it. I mean, I certainly understand the aging part. But it seemed, you know, in 60 or 64, when Jean-Claude Keeley, you know, won 3 gold medals, and all he did after that was go get a job. I mean, you were 19, 20, 21-year-old people that were really good at a sport. You hung in there for a while. You joined the U.S. Olympic team or the French Olympic team, and somehow there was enough sponsorship to get you ski runs and food and uniforms, and that was somewhat about it. It wasn't like somebody says, I'm going to give you $20 million, but you know right then they're not giving you $20 million to lose. You know, I mean, if John Keeley would have said, I'm tired after the downhill and giant slalom and didn't run the slalom, nobody cared. I mean, if you're a Jean-Claude Keeley fan, which I became because the guy was really pretty good, I mean, I might have cared for a minute and wondered, gee, well, I hope the guy's not hurt or something along those lines, but I wouldn't, for $10 million, care. Like, wait a minute, what do you mean you're not skiing? I just wrote you a check. I mean, I think it's incredibly different. I mean,
plus, these are children.
What we're talking about is the mental health requirements that are being imposed upon athletes right now and how they deal with that stress. And it's comparable to the way that other professionals deal with stress, whether you're doctors, lawyers, accountants, radio producers, anything else. We all have stressors in life and how we're looked upon, whether that's who we are, if we're successful. You're not successful unless you're the top radio announcer, broadcaster in the entire country. You know, there are different layers. And so those put on external pressures on the individual.
But Brandon, how does it... I
will say that I think the American gymnastics women's gymnastics team won more than gold when they came back for the silver. If you listen to some of the interviews on Tuesday morning when the word came out that Simone Biles dropped out of the competition, nobody predicted that the women's team would even make the medal stand. They were saying maybe they'll be lucky enough to hold on to bronze. Yet they regrouped without the external pressures, knowing that their leader has gone. And that top scorer was gone, and they came back to get a silver medal.
You sound
that was an incredible amount of self-will and discipline.
Yeah, Jan, go ahead.
Didn't she say that, you know, one of her reasons for dropping out was that she didn't want to make it possible for the team not to medal? That if she were gone,
that's right.
Actually, so she was thinking of the team. It seems when she did what she did.
But you guys, you have to understand how you're talking. You're talking like people who know something about this. That you actually. You sound like a softball coach who came in second, but three of his people were out of town, and realized what an incredible accomplishment that was with three of his best people not there. But that's not the way the world thinks right now. I mean, and I don't know
it's
how we
the
get
way
to
the world should think.
Right, but I mean, but Brendan, you know, how do you? Well, you got a new generation. You always have a new generation. But how many people? I mean, if you have a family and you have kids. And you hate your job, or it's going to be a really windy day, and you're a lineman from the county, you still go to work because you have people depending on you. It's the same. I mean, you probably care more about your kid than a contract with Nike. At least I hope you would. But I mean, this is the idea of pressure. What did Lee Trevino say? They said, "What do you think of the pressure of winning the U.S. Open?" This is before he had a million. I don't think he had any endorsements from where he got him his clubs. He goes, he looked at the guy right now, and he says, "What are you talking about? Pressure is playing for $10 with 5 hours in your pocket." I mean, it's the idea that you're not going to win for Wheaties. I mean, it's not the same as feeding your kids. It's not the same as playing golf for $10 with $5 in your pocket. We've managed to define this money that if you don't make $30 million, you only make $10 million. That's pressure. God, I hope these people better get a life.
I get it, Tom. I think that the money has really made this into something more than a personal crusade for anybody, because she will not suffer over the long haul. This kind of increases her visibility. People who didn't follow the sport or knew much about her now know about her, and I think it's probably made her a more valuable commodity for endorsements later on. But once, you know, if you were not playing for such money in such outrageous amounts, you probably would look at it very differently and take on risks that you wouldn't otherwise, just because, you know, it's a personal thing. Now that the personal and the economic are so fused that, you know, you kind of balance it. It's like, well, I'll still make out okay even if I don't compete at all. So that's kind of contrary to the Olympic spirit, I think. But it seems to be the way, you know, sports operate generally, so we shouldn't be surprised it's at the Olympics, too.
Well, Brent, I'm going to ask you a quick question. Well, we got time. But if she didn't just start feeling this way, again, we're trying to psychoanalyze somebody we don't even never even met, which I don't think she just didn't come to her this week. Do you think if she'd been feeling this way for a while, which my guess is she has, if she wasn't sponsored, if she just would have said, you know, two Olympics enough, or whatever many she's been to, let everybody else get a chance. Do you think she would have just done that?
I think that there are external pressures, not just the sponsorship for the U.S. 18. But in America, we're told to suck it up, get through this. If you have enough, a strong enough mind, you can get through this. Think, for example, of another gymnast, Carrie Strug, and with Bella Corelli, what was that, 2004?
Yeah.
When she jumped on the vault with a broken leg, and when she didn't even need to qualify for the gold medal, but Bella Corelli said,
you can't let down the team, you can't let down me, you've got to jump, even though she was obviously injured from the event before. That was external pressure. It had nothing to do with money in that moment. It had a lot to do with Caroli's ego and the idea that if we don't win the gold, I'm going to be delegitimized as a coach. Those are the kind of external pressures that are put on athletes that need to be dealt with more realistically. The fact that had Kerry Strug not done that, she would have been seen as a quitter, despite the fact that she had a broken ankle. And yes, I think what Simone Biles was going through up until this point was succumbing to the idea that I have to get through this because I have been taught that I'm a champion and I'm strong and I can do anything if I just put my mind to it. Mind over matter. And that's not always the case. And think about this also. She has also been the voice of the Women's USA gymnastics team for what happened with Larry Nassar and the sexual abuse of many of those athletes. She was outspoken enough to take the risks. She was vilified in many cases for doing that and for being quiet for so long. Those are also external pressures that I think she was trying to fight through by making her appearance on the Olympic team. So I think there are a lot of focuses here that are not related just to the money and the sponsorship, but they all are elements of what affect her mental health. She finally just said, I am at a point where I cannot handle this. It is better for my health, both physical and mental health, to step away. And if I step away now, the team can rally. They're good enough. They are good enough without me. It also diminishes their accomplishment if I'm there. You know, you can always say, like your example, if three of my best ball players are gone and I win the silver medal, that means our team was really better than people anticipated. And I think that, you know, she did the right thing by stepping out when she did. She probably could have done it sooner. But, you know, would people be looking at her the same way if she landed, when she landed that ball on Tuesday, if she had a 10-pound fracture?
Well, Brendan, one of the, I bring this up once in a while, and some people use it to their advantage pretty much dramatically. I mean, the three of us all grew up Catholic, okay? If you were either the head of the Mormon religion or the head of the Nazi party, I'm not saying there's an equivalency there. There is not. Their modus operandi is they never trusted the parents to indoctrinate the kids into the way of life, so they would take the kids away in the summer and on weekends and so forth and do it themselves. And but the Catholics never did that. You expected the parents to, you know, to teach the kids the religion and say, hey, you're supposed to go to church on Sunday, sort of thing. I think that these kids, by being moved away, especially these girls, well, it probably happened to their boys too, so I shouldn't say that. I think they somehow lose their support system. The only way that somebody could be a predator like this guy for years and years on young girls is that they don't have any parents right there asking them, wait a minute, some guy came to your room to give you a massage? Did a nurse come with him? Well, no. I mean, somehow or another, the support system that maybe all the rest of us have and don't even realize we had, they don't have, which is really somewhat of a crime. And you think I'm right there?
Well, she was
John, you go first.
Wasn't Simone Biles in foster care for a while because her parents were unable to take care of her?
Yes.
She had surrogate, I mean, her grandparents took care of her. And then, as with a lot of these, you know, sports, your coach and everybody else become your family and the people you look up to and the people who you work for. And I think that's the key maybe to the success, but these children are deprived in many ways. It makes sports kind of a necessary outlet for them to go seek what they're not getting at home.
I'm going to make an analogy here. The same thing
Brennan, go ahead.
When you look at hockey, when you look at Canadian hockey, when you look at a guy like Jonathan Toews or Patrick Kane, just to name two well-known hockey players in Chicago, when they were 11, 12 years old, they were shipped off to the junior league. They were shipped across the country in Canada to live with foster families while they focused on hockey. It happens all the time. And so the support system, the family system, is forfeited when they're young kids. And then they rely upon the coaches, the teams, and you know, coaches change. Team management changes.
So they really don't have the stability. It's almost as bad as the foster care system, where they're shunted from home to home at different ages. And in I think both in gymnastics and in hockey, to name two examples, it's made even worse, because if at a certain point, after a year or two, it's determined that they are not going to be the next Michael Phelps, that they're not going to be the next Simone Biles, then they're discarded. I know a girl that grew up with my kids who was a very, very prominent gymnast until she got bigger. When she was about 13 or 14 years old, she went through a growth spurt, and she had spent years at other camps, and her parents alternated going down to the area to spend time with her. They had jobs that they reconfigured so that they could spend a week or two at a time, but the parents were physically split from each other while they were taking turns watching their daughter. And then all of a sudden, she got too big, and she wasn't performing as well in the national meets. There was somebody younger and smaller and more flexible who took her place.
That's what happened to me. I was.
Terrific. I could see you as a jockey.
Yeah, as a terrific gymnast, and then all of a sudden, I got too big at age five. And I think a lot of that happens, though, Brennan. I mean, it happens in all sports.
It does. Yeah, but you know, we started this discussion with the mental health aspects of what's happening with Simone Biles, and this is one of the more prominent things because of who Simone Biles is as an athlete that it happened at the Olympics. But the mindfulness area, I mean, her comment that she had to really practice mindfulness is something that I'm working with people right now to understand that better. Understand the pressures. You know, why do people do what they do their career?
Well, I hope that
what are their core values? Do their core values align with what they're doing? And if not, what do they need to do to change? Do they have to accept it? And there are five things that they can do, but one of which is accept it and move on, which is what you explained earlier, Chief, when you said that if a guy has got a family, no matter how much he despises a job, he goes to work every day. That's one of the ways to handle it, but there are consequences to that.
Oh, sure. Well, I just hope that whatever she does, I can speak for the three of us, whatever she does, I just hope it's the right thing for her, that she doesn't feel bad about whatever decision she makes 5 years from now. Anyway, guys, thank you very much. S&P futures up 8, NASDAQ futures down 19. Plus, you saved me for talking about more of the Fed's thing yesterday, which was depressing. Talk to you guys next week early. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What do we learn, Palmer?
Take care, guys.
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.